Hello, everybody. Welcome to Popcast Deluxe. You are my happiness is your misery. A weekly cultural review. I'm John Caramonica, critic of the New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a reporter at the New York Times.
Before we get into today's episode, can I just underscore something, which is for the first time ever on Popcast Deluxe?
Wearing the same shoes.
We're wearing the same shoes. This doesn't happen a lot, but I did want to take an opportunity for all our shoe fans out there who are paying attention. It's the first time. It has been both a busy and unusual week in popular culture. We are going to talk about briefly
football
again. There's way more football on this podcast than I was prepared to really ever in life deal with. We're going to talk a little bit about Travis. Is that the name?
Yeah, Travis. That's how you pronounce
Travis?
It.
Yeah. Yeah. Travis and Taylor. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about the Doja Cat album, the week in Nicki Minaj and Cardi B, and the other satellites in the female rap ecosystem right now. We're going to talk about Hasan Minhaj is having not a great week, although maybe came out looking okay. Talking about fabrications or adjustments of the truth in some of his comedy specials. We got songs, we got snacks. You want to tell me about football?
Did you watch the game this weekend?
The Colorado game.
Did you watch any game this weekend?
No, the only game I watched was the game I play.
Okay. Taylor Swift went to see the Chiefs play.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about Colorado getting rinsed.
Oh no, that was bad too.
We were on the phone when you were like walking to the bar.
Yeah, to see if Colorado could cover the spread. You know what that means?
I do know what that means. What was the spread?
The spread was like 21, I think.
They did not cover. They did not cover the spread.
No, I think it's good. I think it's good for media darlings to lose every now and then. I think.
What are you trying to say?
I think it beefs up the lore.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. What was the mood just in the room of watching it?
Oh, I mean, the bandwagon was full and then it was empty.
Like, you know? Very fast.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's how it should be.
And then next week you'll be back watching.
Next week, big game. Yeah, big game for Colorado. Okay. They're probably going to lose again, I think.
Okay.
I know nothing about college football, for the record. Like, I mean, more than you, but still nothing. Something.
Okay.
But I did watch some of the Chiefs game.
I only saw this.
Yes. Yes. This is actually what I wanted to talk about. Okay. Taylor went to go see the game in the family suite of star tight end Travis Kelce.
Yes.
Who attended the Eras Tour earlier this summer, made a friendship bracelet with his number on it.
If you're up on Taylor Swift concerts, there are friendship bracelets, and I received a bunch of them being there, but I wanted to give Taylor Swift one with my number on it.
Which, like,
strong move.
Good move.
Strong move.
But didn't get to give it to her.
Oh, then.
But then they've been flirting via anonymous gossip item, I guess.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I truly have not been following.
Maybe someone behind the scenes exchange, you know, maybe someone put them on a group text. Like, who would it be who put them on the group text and then, like, removed themselves? I can't even come up with a guess.
Yeah, me neither.
Of who the connector is between a star NFL player and Taylor Swift.
Larry Jackson.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Good.
Shout out Larry Jackson.
Good guess.
Yeah.
Yes, former Apple Music and Interscope executive. Yeah.
Probably the only person who has both of those people saved
in their phone.
In their phone.
Really good. Okay. She watched the game from his family suite right next to his mother.
Mom.
What are the politics of screaming the F word in the ear of your potential future mother-in-law? Patrick Mahomes, pass in the end zone. Aí está ele.
Travis Kelce vibra Taylor Swift. Truly, I'm a simple city boy. Please to tell me what is Travis Kelce's deal and what is his mom's deal? No, seriously, you want to know how I know who Travis Kelce is or why Travis Kelce exists? Okay. So earlier this year, I wrote a piece for the Style section about 4G Seller, who sells resells Chrome Hearts pants, among other things, for multiple thousands of dollars, has like a strong celebrity clientele, rappers and athletes.
And not long before my piece came out, he posted a photo in his studio. He often posts photos, sort of like classic, like just like drip photos.
Yeah.
With Travis Kelce. And I knew the name enough to know it was a football player, but I didn't know anything about who it was. So I like Googled and like read up a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think he's mentioned in the piece.
Yeah, you put his name in the piece.
With Odell Beckham.
Next to Odell Beckham Jr.
Famous football players.
Right.
Allegedly.
Yeah. No, I think
that's,
he's like,
that's like my only context for Travis Kelce is that he shopped at 4G Seller at least once, maybe more than once. And in this video of him and Taylor leaving the game, he was wearing
Kid Super.
We don't love that, to be fair.
Did
we
you see what it. They did, though?
No.
Okay.
But who's they?
Kid Super.
No. What did they do?
They changed the name of the garment.
To the Kelce?
To the 1989, whatever the name of the suit is. Yeah. It's a denim suit.
Yeah.
Or like something.
Paint splatter.
Yeah. They put 1989 at the front of it so people found it and thought it was like an Easter egg because that's what Swifties do.
Y'all some sickos.
But honestly, smart of Kid Super.
Yeah.
Kelce, maybe the most famous football player who's not a quarterback to casuals.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Outside to casuals.
Yeah.
To civilians.
Like up there up there with Odell Beckham Jr., I think. Mm-hmm. Played in the Super Bowl this last year.
Okay.
Won. His brother, Jason Kelce, is on the Eagles.
Okay.
So they had a brother versus brother Super Bowl. That's it's big.
Yeah.
So Mama Kelce, you know, she had a split jersey. She had a Chiefs Eagles jersey.
She had a ludicrous.
Exactly. She had a ludicrous. And so the fans were also joking, like, you need to get Taylor one of those because Taylor is allegedly an Eagles fan.
Oh, because she's from Wyoming, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Remember in the song when she's like Eagles shirt on the door? And the debate for a couple of years was like, was she talking about the band or was she talking about the football team?
Oh, I don't actually.
And then when she played Philly on the Eras Tour, she was like, of course I was talking about the football team, which like, who knows? But now she's, now she's allegedly dating a star player on the rival of the Eagles. So she needs the Mama Kelce split jersey.
So to go back to your original question about cursing.
Yeah.
Is the Kelce family legendarily
conservative?
Yeah. Like, are they legendarily clean? No parental advisory stickers on them?
No. Look, they're also the Kelce's podcasters. They have a podcast together.
I'm so sorry for them. I'm sorry. As sorry as I am for us, I'm also sorry for them.
Yeah. No, they're a little loose.
Are they like Gronkowski's?
As brothers. they are, there's some Gronkowski. They're the same position. They're like big white guys who play tight end. Travis and
yes.
And Gronk. Rob.
Yeah. So, okay. So then why is the cursing bad? Or why does it flag
weird? I just think scream. You just watch the mom. She doesn't react. But Kit Taylor.
Well, she's seen Travis Kelce score a lot of touchdowns.
Yeah,
where also, do you feel like maybe Taylor Googled how to be a football fan and one of the things on the YouTube video was like curse?
I mean, better than the other thing she could have done, which is participate in the Chiefs stadium celebration, which is the tomahawk chop.
In 2023?
Oh, yeah.
Seriously?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
So, thank God. I mean, like our Monday morning would have been way different if Taylor Swift did the tomahawk chop. Anyway, great promo for both of them. She's got some stuff in stores and in movie theaters in the next couple weeks. He's in every commercial now.
Someone did tweet something to the effect of four quadrant marketing.
Yeah, this merger is massive.
I mean, again, we hate to be cynics, but we also love to be cynics. Taylor is about to release a movie that will be one of the biggest commercial releases of the year. Yeah, safe to say.
Sure. And the re-record.
And the re-record. People should know about those things. It's certainly a way for people to be mindful of Taylor Swift.
I also think if you spend all summer in football stadiums, you know, she's comfortable there. Wow. And look, I'm just saying,
if you're saying it's quiet for baseball players,
that's for sure.
It's quiet for cricket players.
Yeah. I also think, although she should date an F1 driver, for sure.
That'd be hard.
There's still time. I also think, like, if I were Taylor Swift and I was thinking about perhaps making an album in the dominant genre of the year, that is,
that would be country music. Remember country music? Remember country, Taylor?
I might also just see what was going on with the NFL.
Wow.
Look, I mean, who knows?
Let's talk about, I mean, let's not talk about something that's not gossip. Doja Cat. Doja Cat has a new album.
This album is all a response to the internet gossip about Doja Cat of the last 2 years.
I feel like 2/3 of it is about that. Yeah. The other third of it is about extremely erotic things.
You called it lust in the newspaper.
I did call it lust in the newspaper. I'm also going to call it lust on the podcast for what it's worth.
Would you say that she and her boyfriend are carrying on in public?
They're definitely carrying on. Like, and they're carrying.
Yeah.
In all senses, they're carrying. We sort of joke sometimes about how, like, we've had this conversation in the past about, like, rappers and monogamy, male rappers and monogamy and like flaunting their girlfriends or their wives, and this being like a relatively recent phenomenon. It's actually quite striking to hear a female rapper, I think, go in this talk about like the joys of like a monogamous intimate relationship. Because I feel like a lot of the, you know, Cardi and post Cardi rap, it's not that it's not about their life partner, but it's so kind of like purposefully and directed raunchy. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily located within the specifics of their relationship.
Hmm.
Whereas there's enough on this album where I'm like, oh, you're rapping about a specific
one
person.
Guy over yeah. and over again.
That's how
and
it
not
seems.
Only a guy, but allegedly, from what I read on the internet, a guy who is controversial on Twitch.
I mean, that's, you have reached the outer boundary of like topics that I feel qualified to talk about.
Yeah, but it fits with the larger Doja Cat narrative, which is like,
I do not wish to be a star yes. in the way that you might expect me to be a yes. star.
I am taking all of your expectations of me and I am
dash
stomping on them and actively trolling you over and over and over again
Which was the tweet where she said she lost 300,000 followers or 400,000 followers and then said, I feel like I have a burden lifted off of me.
Yeah.
But actually, how refreshing. Because yeah. again, like when we talked about Doja Cat 2 or 3 weeks ago, one of the things that came up is a lot of mainstream pop stars are actively seeking this kind of like uncritical approbation.
Sure.
Is I think the words that I was using. And Doja Cat is the one person who understands, I mean, or at least who openly discusses how invalid that is as a way for people to interact with you.
And thrives off of the discord, really.
And will do things that I sort of imagine like all pop stars do, whether it's Taylor or Dua Lipa or whoever, Nicki Minaj, Cardi, whatever, but like does them in a way where the set of expectations of what someone in her position should be doing is totally different, and she'll just veer left every time.
You mean musically or persona-wise?
I mean persona-wise. Musically, if anything, I think musically she's been more controlled and tightly bound until this album.
Right, Scarlet.
Yes,
Scarlet. Came out last
Friday.
Week. Yeah.
You know, you think about Kiss Me More. About Say So. I mean, these are incredibly polished songs. And that's not saying she's not doing unusual things, but when I went back to listen to them as I was writing the review for the record, I realized that like no matter how clever her rhymes are, no matter how quirky her flow is, no matter how eyebrow arching her subject matter can be, those songs are stitched so tight.
Well, they're written and produced with Dr. Luke.
I mean,
whose
one
whole
almost
thing
holding,
is stitched tight.
So it doesn't matter almost what she's saying or how she's saying it. This album is quite the opposite. Now, one of the, I mean, I don't want to say it's funny, but unexpected things that Doja Cat has said in recent memory is that her favorite rapper is Homeboy Sandman. Mm-hmm. So Homeboy Sandman, I mean, this is like, like dropping this right in my lap.
Yeah.
So Homeboy Sandman, underground rapper, late 2000s.
Yeah.
Early 2010s.
Sure.
Sort of a idiosyncratic, complicated, and kind of dense flow. Like someone who you'd have to listen to a fair amount of hip hop to get to Homeboy Sandman. You'd have to understand quite a lot about flow and technique to appreciate that individual's flow and technique. This is not like an entry level 1.0. Like I just threw a dart at somebody and decided to enjoy this. This is someone who, at least to my ear, really, really understands flow patterns and techniques, Doja I'm talking about, and sees in someone like Homeboy Sandman, someone who also is something of an adept when it comes to playing with this kind of stuff. Doja on this album,
she's rapping.
She's rapping.
There's a lot of like second and even third verses where I'm like, oh, you, and she like saves it up. For
there's
later
better.
The song,
third verses are often better than the first verses, I find. The things that struck me really about this record, one, it's a lot of early 90s. I wrote down the words Diamond D, Lord Finesse, Tribe Called Quest, De La Soul. For Paint Town Red, which is the single, obviously, that samples Walk On By. The only other meaningful sample of Walk On By that I can think of is on Slick Rick's The Great Adventures of Slick Rick. I'm sure other people have sampled it, but like that's the meaningful one. This is someone who is extremely interested in how technique has changed. I feel like she raps a lot like Ladybug Mecca from Digable Planets. Both in the patience of her delivery and also in pattern. These are, again, it's like when we're talking about someone like Doja Cat, a pop star at this level, very rarely are we talking about this this depth of technique. But that's what she's doing here.
I thought I was going to be the one to be able to shock you with this, but then I saw that your brain went somewhere similar, which is she does a Kitty Pride flow.
Kitty Pride
on one song.
I'm actually so glad you said that. I didn't put it in the review.
Well, Kitty Pride herself called it out. Kitty Pride, I didn't online curio, Florida legend, you know, very to had a brief foray into viral infamy.
Steady, but babe, I planned our wedding already. I don't care how long it takes to get you after me. I wrote our names on my binder and everybody laughed at me. But it really doesn't matter. You are radder and cooler, a hole again, and my flattery makes me look like a fool again.
Great time.
Post-Krayshawn.
Great time.
Great time.
Miss those days.
Yeah, frankly. More than a decade ago at this point. Continues to make music under different circumstances and monikers. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this like...
I should have put it in the piece.
This like talky, like lo-fi flow.
Talky, lo-fi, like lightly whiny.
Yes.
That. Yep. So we should play that song, actually. It's Agora Hills.
Agora Hills, yeah.
Girls hate too. Gun to the pigtail. I love you. I want a big chill. Boy, don't trip. I'll split a big bill. Take you around the world. They don't have to understand. Rub it in their face. Put a rock on her hand. Baby, can you call me back? I miss you. It's so lonely in my mansion. Kissing a healthy cut of stuff. What are they like?
There's the early 90s stuff on this record, which is like, it's boom bap. It's like a touch of like, the speed is like a tiny bit MC Light, but the flow is a little bit Ladybug Mecca. And then there's the cloud rap stuff. I kept thinking of Main Attractions on this record and that early 2010s, like Total Ambient, Beautiful Lou, like that kind of record.
Can I say a name to you? Kendrick Lamar.
What?
Okay, both voices. both the voices and this sort of idea of like, you're putting me on this pedestal that I don't want to be on. So oh I'm going to undermine it. Honestly, I had this conversation with a fellow aficionado and writer that we both know, Jason Buford, yeah. over the weekend. Yeah. And he mentioned like basically like Kendrick for girls. And at first I was like, no, like, come on, like, come on. And then the more I listened to the album, I was like, oh, okay. Like there's something to this, both the chameleonic rap fandom, you know, sort of in and out of characters and eras. But also, yeah, just this idea of like, you know, I basically damn Kendrick on of like, I don't want to be this thing you're forcing me to be. But again, for like a different milieu. I felt it.
All right, let's play this out. Let's play that out. How much of that is about genre? How much of that is about race? How much of that is like wanting to, like in this case, making an album that's steeped in technique that truly is. I mean, my joke when I tweeted it was like hashtag real rap. This is a real rap record.
Yep. Backpacky.
Yeah. Like, and I mean that like in the punchline-y way, yep. like in the funny way, yep. in the kind of like make it like dudes who listen to Static Selecta yep. type guys. You know who you are. Those folks should appreciate this record, but actually probably won't appreciate this record because it's Doja Cat. But I bet if you came like with these, frankly, very groove theory, kind of like 1994 proto neo soul beats and like this kind of rapping, and you just served it to someone in that category cold mm-hmm. and didn't tell them who it was, they'd be like, this goes.
Yeah, she can spit.
Yeah, this goes.
Yeah.
But those songs, I would say, are maybe expressly designed to alienate or push back against casual fans for whom Say So or Kiss Me More is some kind of pinnacle.
Or even Paint the Town Red and the new singles. Like, it's interesting that Doja can both be an artist who hits number one on the Hot 100 and also an artist who sells whatever this album's projected to sell, like 50,000 copies, which is like not where the machine wants her to be and not where casual fans want her to be, but she's like, okay, I'm gonna put
is
out
this
a really
her mel-
dense
is
album.
This forget Kendrick, is this her melodrama?
Well, it's that, it's all these years now, like the most recurrent theme in pop stardom that we keep returning to is like, I don't want to be a pop star, like it's so hard to be a pop star, and all of these people are rejecting their fame and they're rejecting their flock and they're like, you know, she says, like, stop following me, you know, like in literally. All senses.
Yeah.
And yet, like, I also thought she did some nice nuanced mea culpas on this album, like the Love Life, the song, you know, where she's talking about, like, you know, the people who have stuck with her, like when she has overcome stuff.
I love it when my fans ain't mad, when I look snatched. I love it when my mom cook food, she bake that Mac. I love hearing a roar when I go on a stage on tour. They love when I embrace my flaws. I love it when they doing the same. I love it when my fans love change. That's how we change the game. I love it when my life's like this.
There's some little moments of reflection. Mm-hmm. I don't know. As somebody who's never connected with Doja Cat music and never felt like I really
even the big
understood
hits.
What was going on, like, I all sound fine.
I think that they are smart songs that are also astutely made songs that are masquerading as simple songs. And that to me is like an absolute formula for pop superstardom. It has to have something in there for the casual listener, but it has to be thorough and kind of textured enough for someone like us. I think that her biggest hits have been that. These songs, I don't like love this album. I think I'm fascinated by this album.
Yeah.
The choices that are being made on this album, nobody else in her position could make these choices. Certainly not anybody working in hip hop. No, none of the women who are at the top of hip hop right now would make a record like this. And I do think to your point, there is a little bit of like refusenik going on mm-hmm. here of just like, you know what I'd love to do? I'd love to make a 1992 rap record. I'd love to make a 2011 rap record. And I'm Doja Cat and I can make one hit single and that's fine. And that'll get me onto radio and so on and so forth. But all this other stuff that's going to happen underneath it, that's for me. That's how it feels.
It's cool that not only did she make one hit single, but she made a bunch of hit singles, and some of them are even hiding on this album. And then, yeah, I just think, like, this album has the only Doja Cat songs that I might, like, choose to listen to on my own, you know? Like, something like 97 on here.
They ain't know I'm innocent, baby. Look who is talking. They ain't even ready. Spaghetti, baby. They sauceless. Speeding through the city. We medicated the horses. You could hit up Peter the paint on me. Make me gorgeous. I'ma take the geese and chinchilla coat on a walk-in. Don't forget the cheetah print. Speed up. Come here, record it. If that shit ain't bleeding and screaming, I do not want it.
I could imagine putting on... Like, this is like... I've really enjoyed... getting to know Doja Cat in this way from this album and in this whole rollout, where she's been really adamant, you know, that it was like an anti rollout, and yet it still had big, fancy, cool music videos. It still had number one single. Mm-hmm. And it just was like, as a project all around, like, I thought extremely, extremely well executed. Speaking to how you wrote about her in your review in the paper this week, it's like, at this moment where indisputably mm-hmm. women are at the top of mm-hmm. hip hop and the conversation culturally, as far as the genre goes, and yet she's doing it in a completely different way, not really interacting, not doing any of the messy beef stuff.
It's not like Nicki and Cardi going at each other and then their husbands are going at each other. Like, it's nothing like that.
Yeah, it's not like it's messy, but it's controlled. And I thought the messiness was a pose and that the music was going to be as sewn up as it has been in the past. Mm-hmm. And I was refreshed to hear that I was wrong about the direction she was going and that she really was committing to a much more idiosyncratic album and therefore I think career.
And we say that now, but like, this is not a number one album, or does not appear that it's going to be a number one album. Is there some crisis mode that's enacted after this and says, hey, it's great, you want to make this art, you want to make Sound Bombing Volume 3, like, that's great, can you do that later?
Or is she free now? I'll be interested to see how the tour goes.
I very much want. Have you seen her perform live?
I don't think I have.
I actually don't think I have either. Yeah. Not even in the I'm a Cow days.
Right.
I don't think I ever did.
Yeah.
And so I'll be curious to know what this translates to, not simply as a stage show, but who's showing up. What does she have a fandom name?
She asked them not to use whatever name they chose. Incredible. I think she was like, don't do that.
Unlike the Munchkins.
Yeah. In which we're still insisting to Ben Affleck, no, I swear my fans are called the Munchkins.
Shout out to the marketing expert that finally decided to land on.
But isn't this more exciting to you than Last Time I Saw You, the new Nicki song, or even Bongos like Cardi and Megan? Like, when you see, it's just...
I kept having to like almost gut check myself when I was listening to this record because I feel like... And maybe this is just the condition of like being a pop music, quote unquote, critic in this particular era. People are making records within certain boundaries. And like, maybe, never say this, but maybe you get used to where those outer boundaries are. And you throw on a record and you're like, okay, here's the boundaries. It sits here. It sits there. But it doesn't sit outside. And every time I played a song on this record, I was like, this is over here. This is up there. This is down there.
But still listenable.
Like, oh, absolutely. Like, no problem.
Yeah.
But very, very striking aesthetic choices that maybe I haven't felt. I mean, you mentioned Melodrama. Maybe I haven't felt that from a big artist record. I don't feel that from most Taylor records. I don't feel that from the Dua Lipa record. I don't feel that from a Bieber record or whatever. Like, this album activated parts of my creative brain that I haven't really had to tap into for 10 to 15 years.
I was waiting for more concessions sound-wise, like, oh, on the back half, they probably put in a bunch of like sing-songy pop stuff. And then you get to like the one sort of like R&B, like the one like singing song often. You must do the song. it's just like fake D'Angelo. Mm-hmm. It's like Beyonce doing D'Angelo, like, mm-hmm. and she continues to be a good mimic, and like she can play around doing that sort of thing. But like, even that is like, okay, I can imagine them trying to cram this onto the radio, but it's not simple. It's not paint by numbers.
And it's not. And again, all the musical reference points, I was trying to figure out what separated the stuff that sounded like the early to mid 90s from actual early to mid 90s. There's some, I don't know if it's treatment on the vocals. I'm not sure what kind of, you know, what the program or the buttons are. There's a little bit of a fogginess, aquaticness to some of the vocal treatment that feels very au courant.
Like it sounds like rap caviar?
Tiny bit, just a touch. Not overwhelmingly, not like at a Gunna level or whatever, but like a touch. But other than that, everything else feels like 1992 to 1994 or 1991 to 1995. And again, just an incredibly striking choice from maybe the only mainstream pop star who could do that. We should talk a little bit about Nicki and Cardi, who have had a very, very tough couple weeks going back and forth at each other. Nicki's husband showing up somewhere outside someone's house.
Violating his probation.
Yeah. And like back on house arrest. This is like, and then we'll get into the details.
Messy.
It's not good. Nicki, I will say this, as a rapper, Nicki could do this.
But she never has chosen.
She hasn't, but she could. She's that gifted. Like she's that talented of a rapper, but she has chosen a different path for her music. And I think, frankly, Nicki is probably right. Like, I don't think Nicki doing like 1991 genre experiment is really the path for like Nicki Minaj, the character, or like the superstar. It's probably not the right path for her, but she could do this. But I do think that she has another direction she wants to go in. And when she varies herself, she wants to go in a much more pop focused direction when she's doing varying the sound.
And then she'll throw in these little things here.
Like the
and
most
there.
Recent, like the most recent one. That's yeah, like a pop punk song.
Oh, that. But I mean like Ruby Red Sleaze, mm-hmm. like, you know, she did that 5EO record a couple years ago. Like she'll do a like genre, a rap.
A newish one. Yeah, not a sort of like not throwback really a idea. Throwback. Right. Yeah.
But then always reverts to this sort of middle ground, which is what all her albums have sounded like Last Time I Saw You, which is like just pop R&B, right? Like with a couple fairly standard with like single, a rap verse.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not, this is not risky.
No, it's within the boundaries.
Yes.
And actually Cardi more now than 2-3 years ago is also living. I mean, the new song with Megan to me feels very like.
Do you like bongos? I feel like it didn't hit.
Yeah. It's like, I don't think it's the best thing that either of them have done. I don't think it's as good as the previous single they did together. I think that when you're concerned about holding on, this is maybe where the Cardi Megan record differs from whatever Doja's doing. Doja is saying both in word and in action, I don't care if I have the number one slot.
Yep.
Because I know in my heart I'm number one or whatever. I'm great. I'm talented. I don't care if I have the number one slot. Bongos to me sounds like a record when you're like, we have to make a record that holds on to the number one slot.
The quickest way to not be number one is to try to do it. Yeah.
To like, make a big rap record.
Yeah.
That's what we need to make.
And it just seems so foolish in this moment of, you know, the female rappers who are succeeding below the top 40, you know, like
so many.
Sexy Red doing whatever she wants, mm-hmm. like even like a big Scar, you know, I saw mm-hmm. her come out at Madison Square Garden like recently, mm-hmm. you know, like this is like
yeah, I mean,
you can do anything, like there's no rules. So why are we playing like fictionalized version of like a corporate record company boardroom?
Yeah, you know? I mean, this now more than ever. those rules don't exist.
Yeah.
Like, truly, not to be sort of overstating the case, but like, those rules truly don't exist. And they're especially coming up from TikTok. The sheer number and variety of female rappers who are finding success with different styles, whether it's Fly on a Boss, Kali, you know, Sexy Red. It's even the Lotto single, which, like, I don't think of Lotto as like a TikTok rapper at all. Yeah. But like, you know how many people I saw make TikToks have ripped me out the plastic, I'd be acting brand new. Like, yeah. To me, the amount of action that's happening, the variety of it, and the trickle up potency, if you're in that era, why are you sort of like protecting the top with like a moat?
Yeah.
What are you doing? The sort of ground is so fertile. There's so much room to be interesting. And I think for Cardi, especially for Cardi, who has actually done so well varying up approach and collaboration last year, the K-Flock record, the Glorilla record, Fendi the Rapper record this year. Like, there's enough versatility. And I know that Cardi is very much in a Drake fashion, very much keeping an eye on like what's happening and like what's like bubbling up from below and picking her spots. So I don't know. Maybe it is the Drake perspective of just like, I'm going to do a record that's like so obviously a quote unquote hit while also kind of maintaining presence with up and comers. Maybe that's the approach.
But it's been so many years now of the quote unquote hit not working. You know what I mean?
No, like in the big picture.
For yeah. any A-list artist. So I wonder why they keep reverting to that meme, you know?
I should have gotten my sound bombing t-shirt out of storage to review this record, like for sure.
For all six of you guys?
Ayo. Ayo. Salute to my Herb magazine crew. Skull and Bones.
Yeah, good one.
No Yale.
The only thing I folded under was pressure. Can I say I digress? You the aggressor. Now y'all say y'all impressed. I'm the successor. I don't need no intervention or one year lectures. What's so hard to believe? What is the message? Talented and I'm driven like you ain't never seen. And that's why God bless me. You should respect.
Speaking of.
Speaking of where we're going with this.
Speaking of A students. Right. Speaking of A students. Bit of a kerfuffle last week. Hasan Minhaj, the subject of a New Yorker, is expose the right word?
Yeah, I think you could call that an expose.
Yeah. About
your whole life is a lie. That counts as an expose.
About fabrications.
Yep. The bounds of stand-up comedy.
Amalgamations. Yeah. In his stand-up specials.
We were in AP Cal together, but we had chemistry. That's basically the way our parents are. Ages 0 through 30, they're like, no girls, right? Then when you're 35, they're like, why can't you talk to girls? That's basically the way you're like, kill me.
He has had two stand-up specials on Netflix.
Yep. Homecoming King.
And The King's Jester.
Yep.
That's the more recent one. Mm-hmm. And then hosted Patriot Act, which is kind of like a John Oliver type show.
Newsy comedy.
Yes, for way more seasons than I had. I went back to watch a bunch. I was sort of like, knock all these out in an afternoon. Yeah, that's not the case. A lot of those. You want to talk us through what the thrust of the piece was?
So featuring The New Yorker.
Yeah.
Headlined about his emotional truths.
Who can relate?
Written by.
Truly, who can relate?
Reporter Claire Malone, who I know a bit personally, and, you know, is a media reporter, okay, mostly for The New Yorker.
Okay.
And I think that, you know, she revealed that basically some of the autobiographical stories in his comedy that bring a lot of weight to a comedian who is a critic of current events and government policy and very much in the Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert mold, came from that sort of that lineage. That, for instance, his story about getting a letter filled with a mysterious white powder and some of it falling on his
daughter,
his young child, like that didn't happen. Yes. That was made up. Another story he told in one of his specials about after 9/11, his mosque being infiltrated by a sort of undercover agent.
White guy.
Yeah, Brother Eric. Is that what he calls him?
I believe so,
yeah.
Yes.
You know, this is the basis of one of his defining bits. Mm-hmm. And again, sort of like that guy may existed, but not in the way that he said. Which, you know, if you talk to any fan of stand-up comedy...
Can comics lie?
Yes.
Yes.
And the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, reading it, the whole time, all I was thinking about was rap music.
Yeah,
because it's like this
character
is
work. It's, you're doing character work.
It's both autobiographical, and you assume it to be somehow potentially
truth adjacent,
or based in fact, emotionally true. You might say
again,
and also with creative license. And I think that that's the case for most stand-up comedians, but this guy in particular, I think, and the article did a great job, you know, talking about the nuance. In all of this.
Yeah.
But with him specifically, I think there's something about his career.
Okay, so two things, right? One, he comes out of The Daily Show and John, like that lineage, as you say.
They like to play both fact checker and people who can
Well, the fundamental difference between what is done on those shows and what he's saying he does in his stand-up specials, which is that those shows take factual accuracy as the foundation and then spin humor from the factual accuracy or find humorous ways to deliver factually accurate things. What the stand-up specials do is use personal narrative that are woven into like real life events in quote marks, woven into real life events and drawing, frankly, a rather sober kind of comedy.
Right.
From like not a yuck yuck kind of comedy, but a rather sobering kind of comedy from that. The point being, if you, a casual viewer, are watching this same individual doing both of these things, can you tell the difference between the news, the jokes on top of the news versus the hypertrophied version of an alleged personal story that's like not actually real?
I mean, the other crucial problem here is that he's just not funny.
Well, so, don't, yeah. Like,
and certainly not.
I'm the critic. Wait, okay, so I watched I'd watched some of the stuff previously in real time when it came out. Yeah. But I went back this weekend and I watched a bunch. And what I will say about a bunch of the Patriot Act stuff, and this is like very vibey high school teacher.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like you know.
He's like kids, yo, pulls up the chair, spins it backwards and yeah.
Like doing this.
Yeah.
Very Hamilton core.
Yes.
I don't find it funny by and large. I feel like there's a way that he's trying to like offer views into, whether it's through family or culture, but doing it in a way that feels manipulative and kind of disingenuous almost.
Yeah, he's smarmy.
Smarmy. Yeah.
There's also the other big sort of untruth or half-truth pointed out in the piece is the one about him going to prom with.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And he tells a story about wanting to go to prom with his friend, a white mm-hmm. woman. He thought he was going to take her and he shows up at the door and she has some other date. And he says, because she and her family didn't want a brown guy in the photos,
right.
Basically. And like, you know, that turned out to be untrue. And mm-hmm. in part, when he would tell this story, he would use like photos from that time in his life.
That's this like, kind of like purposeful fudging.
Yeah.
Like he talks about family. He uses a photo of his daughter.
Yeah.
Like, I will say, so in rewatching The King's Jester, which is the most recent stand-up special, which is where some of the major stories that are fibs turned out to be. There's a bit that they don't talk about in the New Yorker story, but that I was very struck by in the wake of the New Yorker story. Towards the end, it's talking about trust.
Right.
And reasonable viewers. And it's in connection with something that he had done about a guy who runs Alden Global Capital and maybe like lived near Jeffrey Epstein, some kind of
sure, current events.
Yeah, like a low hanging joke.
Yeah.
That like wasn't also not funny. But then he goes on a whole riff about like this thing, it's based on trust. I trust you to be a reasonable assessor of my humor. You trust me to be delivering things that are true. And I was like, if you had gone this entire way and not done this bit, maybe you could have gotten away with
it. Well, that smells like guilt, right? And our colleague, Jason Zinnemann, who writes about comedy in his piece about this kerfuffle, mentioned that as well. And it's
very
like,
striking.
It smells weird. And Jason had a line actually that I thought really nailed it.
Go for it.
He said he didn't invent stuff to make himself funnier. He did it to raise the stakes in the easiest, most self-regarding way possible.
What's intriguing is so much of this most recent special is about the lengths that he will go to amplify his own fame at the penalty of his wife. Yeah, right. I thought it was
pissing
notable.
Off his wife.
I thought it was notable we don't hear from the wife in the New Yorker piece.
Sure. He sat down and answered for his emotional truths.
Emotional crimes.
And he basically says, like, I'm allowed to do this. It's fine.
And okay, as a total sidebar, is the expectation of truth higher for non-white comedians than it is for white comedians?
I think the barrier, no, because, you know, for instance, in Zinnemann's column, he talks about Richard Pryor making up a bunch of stuff. You know, like, I think it's about a specific subgenre of comedy, which is autobiographical and also based in sort of weaving personal biography with current events.
Serious question. Does John Mulaney lie?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, yes.
Yes. Are people mad at him about it?
No, but like David Sedaris, people are always mad at David Sedaris, right? For like embellishing his career long sort of autobiography, humor writing. I think again, like as soon as you make this about moral and political issues, then I think people bring a different expectation of truth to the equation.
I also think that, like I said, the thing that he seems to want to do is to be a player in real life conversations about politics.
Yes.
Those conversations are real. They are actual. And he is very clearly trying to insert himself into them. And so I think some of the expectation is if that's the scene that you're trying to play in, if you're trying to be a part of, then what you bring into that world should be true, factual, authentic. Now, I got to be honest, rewatching this after reading the New Yorker article, there's obvious, I mean, the embellishments feel, I don't want to say obvious, but there are so many convenient overlaps that it's like hard not to see the whole thing as lightly fictionalized.
Right. Like obviously, all stand up.
Yeah. Obviously, like hindsight being 2020 and all that. But some of these stories, they're sewed up so, so cleanly that it's hard not to be like, all right, there's no way that happened on the same day that that happened. There's no way that this also happened on the same day that this happened. But I don't know. I guess on a fundamental level, it didn't really bother me if he was making stuff up.
Yeah.
It really says more, frankly, about the audience than it does.
Yeah, the expectations on him. And I do think the piece itself, again, wrestled with all of this and was sort of like, what do we expect, A, from our comedians, and B, from our comedians who we also want to be arbiters of the real world, especially when it comes to race and politics.
Can I galaxy brain this for a minute?
Sure.
Okay. You remember when Trevor Noah was taking over The Daily Show?
Yep.
And the first thing that came out was, here's a bunch of like bum tweets.
Yep. Like when
Jewish anti-Semitic comedy, you know, like not great stuff.
Yep. The milkshake ducking of Trevor Noah. Yep.
Yes. That was unearthed by maybe it was a BuzzFeed reporter or something along those lines. And so Trevor Noah is announced, but the first thing that Trevor Noah has to do as the presumptive or the soon to be host of The Daily Show is go on an apology tour, basically, or make some kind of statement about, I hope you won't hold 10 bad tweets against me. Look at my other 8,000 tweets. Yep. Like, don't look at anybody's tweets. Like, no. Just don't do that. But you know what I'm saying? Like, that became the narrative. And for the first couple months, at least, it was sort of like Trevor Noah, who tweeted these terrible things, is the new host of The Daily Show. is there not something convenient if Comedy Central is setting this guy up to become the next host of The Daily Show?
And that's the backdrop of all of this, is he's like first in line, right?
Allegedly.
Yeah.
We don't, you know, we don't know. We're not like privy to those conversations.
No, but also like if you had to pick 10 people who could host The Daily Show, he's near the top of the list.
Absolutely. Is there not something convenient about this? Which is to say that there is brush to be cleared with almost any potential candidate, right?
Especially comedians.
Yes. Yeah. This certainly does an admirable job of clearing the brush. What you have in this article is you have workplace condition stuff, people speaking out against how what it was like to work on Patriot Act. You have problematic, like philosophical problematic comedy stuff. Is he a liar? Is he a straight shooter? Does it matter if he's a liar or a straight shooter? There's a number of things that this article achieves that if they announce him as the host of The Daily Show, let's say a week or a month or 3 months from now, there's no ammunition left. All of it's been burned off in this article. And I wonder if I was sitting at a desk in Comedy Central, there might be some small part of me that's like,
if he can make it through this.
This is what I'm saying. Like,
we could just make him the host of The Daily Show.
Here's the, let me. You're going to double galaxy?
Your galaxy brain things? It's 2023, bro. Nobody cares who the host of The Daily Show is. Like, come on.
The
like,
Daily Show, is that like, still on?
Nobody even cares. Like, you can have whatever in your resume and be president. Like, it doesn't matter who, like, if the host of The Daily Show, like, kicked a dog once. Like, it just doesn't matter.
Did you say that Hasan Minhaj kicked a dog?
I only said that in my stand-up special.
Oh, my God. Someone had to fact-check that. Yes, fair.
Come on.
Look, not no, but, you know, I'm not a Viacom lawyer. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not a Viacom crisis PR specialist.
Good luck to all those people trying to make The Daily Show relevant, whoever hosts it next.
Maybe this is the most relevant thing that could possibly happen to the deal. Also, like, again, in the joke, in the stand-up special where he's talking about, I'm trending, I'm number four, I'm number three, I'm number one. This is the hottest he's been in weeks. I'm sorry. This is the hottest he's been in years.
He's trending.
Yeah, he's trending AF.
Let's listen to some music.
I would love to cleanse. You go first.
I got a song.
Yeah?
I got a song of the week.
Let's go. Let's go.
I'm a tourist when it comes to UK drill. I would never pretend to know the ins and outs of this scene and genre. Like, I have my hands full in America. Wow. But every now and then, a rap record will come out, and I'll be like, I could get into, like, even though that maybe it's just Top Boy season, but like, you know, this song Triple Threat from the new Heady One mixtape with K-Trap. This song features a rapper by the name of Clavish, who has an album from earlier this year with one of the best titles I've ever heard, which is Rap Game Awful. But I saw this video perfectly out of context on my For You page on X, formerly known as Twitter. You know, when you see a video and somebody ripped it and it has no identifying information on it.
It was that.
It was that. And I, for some
was
reason.
Was there a caption or something?
Yeah, it was like, UK drill is back or something. And okay. I'm like, sure.
Yeah, great. Great.
Like, and I clicked it. I watched it. And at first I didn't recognize anyone. The second verse, Heady One, I'm like, okay, I know Heady.
Yeah.
And I watched the whole thing, which is like, you know, when you're in an endless scroll and you get in the zone on something and you make it to the end and you're like, oh, that means something.
Yeah.
And then I had to reverse engineer, find the actual YouTube video for it, watched it again, just back to back. This is just like insane rapping for, you know, 3 minutes straight, just three verses, three rappers, great video. I'm like still trying to parse the slang, you know, I'm just like picking up every third line or something.
Great.
But like just really, really held my attention, which is like the most I can ask for from a new rap song. So yeah, this is Triple Threat by Clavish, Heady One, and K-Trap. Rap Game Awful. If you hear me rap out of G and Lee, just know I ain't whipping the Benz. Most of my friends are drillers and trappers. I ain't with her to chat him. Phone crash like, do me a favor, clap him. Make sure he's not standing. Spa day with a boot, or just on a booting. But health is wealth. I just ran out of credit. But the food that I've got's gonna sell itself. What do you got?
Okay. I know you've had this experience. But every now and again, I feel like multiple people slash websites slash people on Twitter or Instagram like conspire to, I feel like, to kind of directly tell me specifically, hey, this thing is important. This
you, John music. Caramonica?
Yeah. Like, I feel like that happens occasionally.
You think they're aiming at you, or?
I feel it's like some combination of direct and indirect.
Okay.
But like the end is supposed, the end goal is me supposed to be like, that's an important thing.
Yep. Very You're rarely, resistant to that.
Rarely works, yeah. Right? But and someone for whom that has rarely not worked for is Gene Dawson.
Gene Dawson. I was just going to say, spoiler alert, if you're a publicist or a manager and you tell John something is important, there's no way he'll ever think it's important. It's like, don't do that.
I literally can't.
It's not going to work.
Truly shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah.
So I've tried a couple times with earlier Gene Dawson stuff. It doesn't, like, I get it. I just never really transcended for me.
Who is Gene Dawson?
A person who is beyond genre.
Yeah.
There's a new Gene Dawson song with SZA.
Mm-hmm.
It's called No Seasons. And I think it is by far the best thing I've heard from them so far. I was joking to you before we started recording. He sings like A$AP Rocky used to rap, which is like kind of good.
It's better
like
than singing how A$AP Rocky raps now. Just kidding. We love you, A$AP Rocky.
Come on, podcast. I think that there is, we were also talking about horror before we started recording.
Yeah.
There's like a light.
We're gonna watch some horror movies this October.
I very much would not like that. But there is something like lightly horror about the vocal presentation on these Gene Dawson songs. But I like, they're broken in a way that I have previously felt was too far towards broken. But with this song, and then especially from the midpoint forward when the scissor part arrives, it kind of like does transcend into something kind of elegant and wistful and kind of chaotic, but not unpleasant in any way. It feels like the Gene Dawson part is like proposing a problem, and then the scissor part is solving the Rubik's Cube of the problem.
A great way to use a feature.
Totally.
That's like the real purpose of a feature.
I'm really also, I don't know the Hollywood behind the scenes of who's friends with who or who song writes for who or yada yada. I was not expecting this particular combination of people. SZA's not on like dozens of other people's songs. So I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I don't know who's friends with who. But I thought this song as a Gene Dawson record was the best Gene Dawson record so far. And it also solved the proposition of what a great Gene Dawson record could be like using the same basic component parts as the previous ones. So should we listen / watch? It's called No Seasons.
You ready to eat some meat flavored Doritos?
Again. Hey. I hit the exotic shop over the weekend.
Yep. For legal goods only.
Yeah. Like, so when I go to the exotic shop in New York, if you are unfamiliar in New York, a lot of weed shops are selling foreign snacks as like a business cover. Like, who knows what the legalities, politics of it are.
Yeah, it's funny because the rise in the market for exotic junk food came directly alongside the gray market weed stores of New York.
Yes.
So they just naturally combined, I feel like.
Good cover.
Yep.
Good cover.
And same clientele. Except you.
Except me. So when I went
Mr. Weed Trips himself.
Yes. They should have a photo of me when you walk in the store. So like I went in over the weekend. I got these. I got a few other things, which I'm sure we'll do in subsequent episodes. These are garlic steak flavored Doritos. These
garlic
are
product, steak flavored Doritos.
Products of Taiwan. But when I brought my choices to the front counter and I said, I'll take this. I got a very kind of curious look from the woman behind the counter and said, that's all. I should have just hit her with the link to the Weed Trips reel.
Yeah. So unfortunately, the hot new Doritos flavor on regular shelves is jalapeno pineapple.
Nice. That's going to be a tough episode.
Which I thought, well, this is the thing.
Oh.
I ate them on my own because I was like, I have to taste test these for John.
Yeah.
And they were highly recommended by friend of the podcast, Justin W. And he was like, these are the best Doritos I've had in years.
Better
and
than.
I got my hopes so high. Man. And like, unfortunately, they taste like a spicy margarita.
You think I might love them?
Maybe now I have to bring them in. I was so disappointed in them that I'm like, I don't even want to eat these on the show. And I like blew my first impression.
Yeah, sure.
But this
journalism,
this now has me
raw.
As excited as raw I was.
Takes. Raw thoughts.
As excited as I was about the
why are you opening it like a future Frito pie? First of all, the rawest thoughts on offer are going to be about the garlic steak Doritos.
These have to be good.
Wow. Just the smell alone is so nuts.
Okay.
I genuinely find the smell rancid. Much like the TGI Fridays mozzarella stick puff.
Okay.
It did that thing.
Yeah.
Tastes way different than it smells.
Yep. A little bit sweet.
Yeah. Where's the steak though?
Yeah, there's not a lot of steak.
A1 Wagyu?
I found that in recent years they've gotten really good, the food scientists in general, of imitating meat flavor in non-meat products. Mm-hmm. But this doesn't have that. But the flavor is good. It just doesn't taste like meat.
How different is this from Cool Ranch?
It doesn't taste like Cool Ranch. It's very light on flavor. There's just not a lot going on here. I think it's pretty good. It's just not strong. It's a mild chip. I feel like this speaks to you more than it speaks to me.
I genuinely think it's really good.
Yeah.
It is, like you say, a slightly sweeter version of like what I call a spicy Dorito.
Yeah.
But I'm not getting the steak.
I'm not getting steak either. It's just like a little bit of sweet garlic, but it's not even that garlicky. Okay. If I really put my mind at Ruth's Chris, I can imagine.
What about Keen's, though?
It does not taste like Keen's.
It does not taste like Keen's.
Chip. It's a bad steak chip.
Yeah. It's a 6.5, but it's not true to the packaging.
I'm going 4.5 just because I think it's just lacking punch overall. Like, I think, again, I think it's like, I have no complaints about this flavor, but it barely tastes like a Dorito, let alone an exotic Dorito.
Whereas for me, I would, if this was a regular issue Dorito that was like on the shelves normally, this would be my preferred Dorito.
So you're saying this is the best Dorito?
I'd say it's I find it a little less caustic than a Cool Ranch Dorito.
You're crazy. This is the last Dorito I would buy on a shelf of all the normal Doritos.
Well, that's great. More for me. That is our show. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. You can watch us talk about snacks and other things on Podcast Deluxe every week on YouTube. That's tinyurl.com/podcastdeluxe, which is where all the episodes are. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com, get in the Discord, get in the Facebook, tinyurl.com/podcast Facebook/podcast Discord, and subscribe to Podcast. And we get your audio and video to audio adjacent products That would be on YouTube. That would be on Apple. That'd be on Spotify and whatever other places those things are available. Our senior producer is Sawyer Roquet. Our editor is Jamie Heffitz. Thank you to Karen Gans, Pedro Rosado, Pat Gunther, Leslie Davis.
Nogalogli.
Nogalogli.
How could we forget?
Yeah, duh. And we'll be back next week.